Excellent.
I did too.
Yeah. Steve brought some. Good morning, Terry.
Is this chair taken?
No, it will be only if you sit in.
I guess I'll take it then.
Yeah.
You come on over.
I brought my little baseball cap here. The sun's coming up bright.
Those workers are so decorative. Look at the shirt and the pants.
How you doing, Larry?
Good. You got enough trucks going by your house now?
Oh, they're gone.
Good.
I was glad to see that water truck come down.
Yeah. I'm at three.
How long does that what last?
Side dumps. Carrying stuff out yesterday.
Yeah, I think they're taking it down to Whale Creek.
Oh my gosh.
I'm at they're taking out, it's going down there?
One of them was just coming out of Whale Creek, loaded to the gills.
Well,
and turned south.
They've got gravel in down there in the pit. Plus, they're bringing all the debris and the dirt and stuff that they're hauling out.
I don't think anybody's up there.
In there, so.
I guess they know what they're doing, I hope.
Don Sullivan.
Because I don't know what they're doing.
But that's all, I don't think.
Just before I got up to your road, I met a semi-truck and 53-foot trailer heading south.
I did too.
All enclosed. I don't know, somebody must have wanted something awful bad to get that.
It was kind of a soft-sided semi.
You don't see semi-trucks that big, you know, full interstate highway type trucks up here. No, just once in a while.
Still been,
you know?
I thought,
and about half the time when they do come here, they turn themselves over at the hairpin.
Yeah. We stood down at the Improvo.
Not a good road for somebody. Not with that long a trailer.
And, you know,
no, even the grocery trucks used to be that they would come to Camas. And the Home Ranch store would go down there.
I remember Angie. She would go down there and meet them, unload everything into her car if it would fit, and then drive back up to the Home Ranch.
Is it people or trucks?
It's people days.
Okay.
What's your name again? I don't believe I know you. I mean, you look familiar.
I know your name's Dave.
Thought your name was George.
Jan.
George, Jan. That was close.
You are very close.
Is that close enough?
In Europe, you can call me John or Jan. That's what Oliver calls me. How you doing, Jan?
How is Oliver?
He's doing good. I saw him just this morning. He was walking around there. They have those little rainbirds that run 24/7, you know, off the creek. He just moves them around, so that whole area. His cabin's coming along pretty good.
Looks good, yeah. He's.
It's good. I don't think he'll finish it in time to get in this winter. But
no,
he doesn't care.
This year is the roof.
Is it?
And that's what he plans to get.
It's looking good.
He's got to remember he's getting older too.
Right.
You know.
I know.
He's never been in a hurry.
Yeah, you got to budget that in.
Yeah.
Slower.
Well, I guess we could start, huh?
Yes.
What are we going to start? A riot? In thinking about this, it has always amazed me, and more and more as the years pass, how fascinated we are with the homesteaders. You know, really, we think a lot about the homesteaders, and we have nothing in common with them. Really, we see the same mountains, we see the same trees, but the way they lived here was totally unrelated to the way we live here. When I came here, I bought this place for $10 an acre. And I bought it from Tom Reynolds, who bought it from the county for $1 an acre. So he was happy too. The only structure left on the place was that little cabin. And it was homesteaded by a fellow by the name of Ed Rue. And he moved up here with his wife and two toddlers.
Oh, brother.
And they must have stayed long enough to prove up because they owned it. And so that's why I like to start here with a homestead. This is probably one of the least successful homesteaders on the North Fork. And we're going to go down to Kettler Ranch, which is one of the most successful. But Ed DeRue, Rue, wasn't DeRue, just Ed Rue, he expected his neighbors to help him. And up here that was kind of a way things went. You know, they had a barn raising and they, everybody would show up and help. I'll tell you one of the funnier stories about Matt Brill here in a second about help. But Ed talked to Matt Brill, who had a team of horses, and wanted him to help skid logs in to build a bigger house. And so Matt said, sure. And one of those logs still lays out here on the, you can't see it from here, but it's rotten pretty good now, because this was in the 30s. And Matt was walking alongside the team, pulling a great big larch in. And he looked back, and Ed was sitting on the log. And he said, you know, these horses are working hard enough pulling the log. They don't need you as an added thing, so get off the log. Second log, he looked back and the guy's on the log again. So Matt just unhitched his horse and said, you obviously don't need my help, and left. And the guy never built the house. There was a 4-foot deep hole over here that he used for a root cellar. There's no water on the property except just over the hill here, there's a spring seep. And you can't drink it, it stinks. Yeah. I presume they use it for other things, but...
So what did he do for water?
He packed it, I guess, like I did when I came here.
Out of the river, or...?
I usually carried it from Trail Creek.
Trail Creek, okay. Well, did he farm? Did he raise food?
Nobody knows. Uh-huh. He was gone by the time any of us came. And this was this meadow did not exist. It was all aging lodgepole. We cut 12,000 lodgepole posts out of that meadow. Oh,
wow. That's where your business came from?
That was, well, it was, no, it was when I bought my business. Actually, we cut posts up here and sold them to the business that I then bought. We had chips down the road, right in the middle of the road, when they brought their peeler up here, and the chips were 4 feet deep in a row, so you couldn't drive in. When we burnt the chips, we activated the Forest Service for 100 miles around, because it was all green chips. You know, and we had a row 200 yards long, putting a plume into the air.
Well, if he proved up, there would be a record at the county of what he did. You know, so many miles of fencing, so many animals.
Yeah,
so
whatever.
There should be a record of
that. Yeah, it doesn't show in a property record, because I went down and looked at the property record, and it went U.S. government to Ed Rue to Tom Reynolds, or to the county to Tom Reynolds to me. Mm-hmm. And the other half of this homestead, I ended up with half of it at one point, and I sold 40 acres to Lynn Ogle. So I have 40, and he has 40. And the other 80 belongs now to Gary Lapka. And he will sell you 40 acres of it.
He just
with some very nice buildings on it for, I think, $1.2 million.
He just passed away. So
who did?
Gary Lapka.
He
died a couple months ago.
Then.
Maybe I'm thinking Byers.
Gary Byers? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Byers.
He's selling. He's selling.
Yeah. Lap guy just had a one-acre lot on the river.
When did Bart Monahan come?
Bart Monahan was the homesteader at Christmas. And he was like many people today. He was retired when he came here.
Oh.
He was a Secret Service agent. And retired and wanted to get away from people. And up here he came. And their little cabin is where he lived. He was a very interesting character. And a favorite amongst the kids. You know, when I came here, I was 10. And he was one of the people you always wanted to visit, because he had a great big spyglass so you could look at the mountains. And he has interesting stories.
What residence did he go? Huh? Did he ever mention what time frame did he work in Washington, D.C.?
No, he never talked about that. He wouldn't talk about that. He didn't want to.
He probably didn't want to talk about it, yeah.
But he did tell stories about how he only changed underwear once a year. And the kids all thought that was really neat, you know.
Whether it was dirty or not.
He wore red long johns. you know, ankle to neck. And when he put them on, he sewed the front shut. So he couldn't get out of them. The trap door still worked, you know, and the bottom button opened. And he would do this in May. The first hot day in May, he would build a fire out in his overhang and throw the old underwear into the fire and take a bath and put on the new underwear. His little cat was smaller than this, really.
Oh, dear.
A very small, very small stove in it.
Isn't that the one with the porch on it?
Yeah, it had a big overhang. Now, Crispin's turned it into an actual screened-in porch. When Bart was there, it was just an open area, and he stacked his wood under it. So his wood was right available. But his house, you didn't want to go in it, because the only thing he burnt was lodge pole, and he never washed. So if you put your hand on his bedding, it was black. Just everything was black. The whole house was like it was painted shiny black.
Needless to say, he was not married.
He was not what?
Married.
No, he was not married. He had a
Had he ever been married?
He used to walk through here and go to the mail out at the main road here. And in later years, he went straight over the hill to the main road to get his mail. But he didn't care so much about the mail as he did that the mailman would bring him a bottle of booze every week.
Oh.
Two a week. And so he filled garbage pits along the way with empty booze bottles. And you go out here, I'll bet, yet, where the old dump was, and find bottles.
Or collectibles.
And they'd be antique bottles now.
Oh, they'd be antiques for sure.
Did he have a car or a vehicle?
He did not have a car. He had a car. It was in the garage, in the barn, locked up, and he never drove it when I knew him. He was too old and crippled, I think. It was a major deal to walk out to get his mail.
How did he get his food?
The mailman.
Okay.
The mailman always brought, that's how the mailman really made their living.
Groceries and
was bringing stuff for the people living up here. You got to remember that this road was not plowed.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, it was just not plowed. If somebody got sick, it took when one of the old guys up Trail Creek died up here, it took 5 days to get his body to town. They loaded him on a dog sled and went in stages to town.
Austin Weikert's father.
Yes, Austin Weikert's father.
Well, and didn't Matt Brill have appendicitis or something and they had to get him out?
Yeah, they flew. He had enough airstrip space down there. Okay. They landed a little plane with skis and took him out to deal with his appendicitis. But can you imagine how tightly locked up this country was when you think of the kind of cars there were in the 30s, the kind of roads there were which were not plowed at all. Not at all. I can remember when I was in college, we'd go and visit Maginoletarian at the border, and they had a winter supply of food all in the house. And they had to have it in there by October 15th because it could snow any time after that. Some years it didn't, but some years it did. So you could hardly get up the stairs to their second story because there were bags of flour and beans and sugar.
Well, the road wasn't finished to the border until 1920.
Right.
So there was no road, you know.
Here comes Tardy Annie.
So why were there so many homesteaders up here? All of Trail Creek and all this area and Frank Klutz and Abbott and Brill, and why did they all homestead up here?
Well, you got homesteading on the North Fork came in two waves. There were the early ones that came around 1910, and I really didn't know any of them. You know, they were had died or sold out or whatever by the time I was up here.
Where'd they come from?
They came from all over for free land. Okay. That's why the people homesteaded. Matt Brill showed up here with an axe and $2 in his pocket from Milwaukee. But they came here for free land, and the early homesteaders all homesteaded in the park.
Yeah, that's what I wondered.
Yeah.
Really logical. It's all open land. Big Prairie was Big Prairie then, too. Mm-hmm. So you could homestead and you didn't have to clean, prove up. When you, later, the second bunch that came in the 20s, like Frank Wirtz, his place was full of big timber. He had no chance of clearing the land required for the requirements. Mm-hmm. So they suspended him, forgave him. And he didn't have to do it. He had a garden and and a lot of stumps.
What did they have to do to proof up?
Well, originally, the original stuff was to, you had to prove up by clearing so much land, living so long on the property, you could be here in the summer and leave in the winter. And that's what the later homesteaders, by and large, did. Mm. And you had to build so much fence, that you really wanted to live there.
To farm so much land, so much acreage and crops.
Yeah, and on the North Fork, there was no farming, really. They tried different things, but the only thing that really grew up here was hay. But the problem is that then when you had hay, the logical next crop is cattle, right? Try driving a cow from here to Missoula and see how profitable that works out.
That's why they shot every bear that came on the property.
Yeah. The original homesteaders shot every predator.
Anything, yeah.
Birds.
Wolves.
Animals, wolves.
Oh, that's chewy.
Oh, here comes trouble.
I don't know where I was the last time I was at to see you, but it wasn't here.
Oh. If we had picked in advance who'd be tardy, we'd have picked you.
I'm on a bunch of people's game.
I'm telling you what, I
haven't
been
here.
And so we're going to scoot over into the sunshine.
We've got enough sweets to see.
Don't feel it.
All right.
I saw it and went nuts
today. I'm directions myself.
Yeah.
Well, you were here last year.
We just had the first cat.
Yeah, but you know, you forget. What you need to do is put a sign out there somewhere. It says Larry Wilson's place.
There is a sign out there.
Yeah, it says studio.
Well, the first sign just says the name of the first settler. I didn't realize that was your place, so I stopped.
And fiberglass insulation in the walls in this.
You know, these guys stood up right behind me. Yeah.
I just need it all pulled out. I'm going to have a guy come in and foam spray.
Nice yeah.
I'll take advantage of this slight break here to get some more goodies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You can bring some back with you.
You could recap everything you've said.
How are you? How are you?
Oh, how you doing?
Glad to see you got up this morning.
Yeah, you made it.
Yeah. I've never seen anything look like that before.
What did we miss? What is
the driveway?
Blanks.
Is that a blank?
357 wad cutters.
Oh, can I play with them?
You can have them forever and ever.
I've never. Can I still shoot that? You think? This one looks good.
It might be hard to get out. It's been fired.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Oh, they both have been fired.
They both been fired. They were duds.
Okay, so this is what a blank looks like, huh?
No, not really. A blank would have paper wad in the end. This is a metal wad cutter that's used for target practice. Light load.
This is a driveway.
Yeah. My dad had thousands.
Yeah? There you go. Don't say I never gave you
a
Winston.
He's actually sitting.
Winston, won't he feed you?
See what Joyce brought.
I'm gonna have these out.
Oh my goodness.
This is rhubarb, I know. That's fruit cake. And these are muffins made. And these are ginger.
Those are the green ones.
coffee what it was like.
Okay. Well, I'm always up for rhubarb.
Can't go wrong with rhubarb. Maybe. Rhubarb and sugar, you can't go wrong.
That's right.
Sandy, your tip is
Once you get up a little closer, you can kind of see it hard on the ground. He was a lawyer, and then he became a judge.
I've got
Columbia
foundation
Hall.
Walls.
And his family would go up there.
I've got the it's all wood frame.
And then foundation hired a couple of maybe two or three guys, but they grew hay and all kinds of vegetables. Oh, yeah. Tons of stuff, you know, for their family. Yeah. And then whatever they didn't need, they took back. They lived in Columbia Falls during the winter. His last name was Mel. I can't remember his first name.
I did not know the Mermaid of Me.
Yeah, and I'm not even sure exactly what year they
were. The park originally, when they bought somebody out, would burn the cabin down.
Yeah. This one, they didn't bother to burn it down. It just collapsed.
Yeah.
Is this your rhubarb?
Yeah, it just fell down.
No. It's delicious, whatever.
A gravel bed.
Yeah, very nice.
Somebody told me, when you go in there, they use newspapers for wallpapers.
Plastic layers.
And there was a story there, Titanic sinks. Well, somebody, it wasn't up there. Like, by the time I got up there, 5-6 years ago, somebody had taken that article and peeled it off and took it.
1912, that's old.
Yeah. So the cabin was at least there that long. I'm not sure exactly. I'll bet you Lois has some paperwork on it. Remember, I took a little tour with 5 or 6 people. I think Erlichson's, Terry was with us, a couple other people, and we walked up to the cabin, Miller Cabin.
Oh, the Miller Cabin, right.
He eventually became a judge.
He was a judge, yep.
I remember
J.K. Miller.
The paperwork you gave me on him mentioned one of the daughters got sick or something, and so they got in a wagon or whatever and tried to get her, you know, on the inside road, of course, over to the train station. But she died before they got that
far.
So that was, other than that, they had a pretty happy life in the summertime, I guess. You know, I don't think they stayed in the cabin during the winter. But,
who is that girl?
Lisa Hale Gallagher, Jim Hale's son.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I knew I'd met her before.
Raging Cajun.
Yeah. I guess you'll have to clap your hands and get class started again here.
Yeah. Well, Sally interrupted things. And okay, should we start again? Okay, get all the tardy ones sitting down with a cookie in your hand, or better yet, in your mouth.
We apologize.
I would like to know more about the three brothers.
Yeah, your time frame.
They came up here. Ed, Emil, and Axel Peterson.
Okay. There's not much more to tell about them.
We'll have to.
Which two are they, Lois? I didn't hear you.
What's that?
Ed Peterson, Emil Peterson, and Axel Peterson. Three brothers. We all homesteaded north of here.
Oh.
Their homesteads became part of the Foreman property.
Okay.
And they had a place on Mud Lake and a place overlooking the river. And I forget where the third one was, but...
Where'd they come from, I wonder?
I don't know. They might have been convicts on the run.
Well,
we had plenty of those up here.
Well, yeah,
you know
might be some up here right now.
Peter Moore, so...
If you think about it, the homesteaders that came here were all poor as dirt. They had nothing.
Yeah.
Matt Brill, who became one of the most successful, came here with... I can't remember now, $1 or $2 and a double bitted axe. And that's what he had when he got off the train in Columbia Falls.
$2.
But you know, Peter Moore's uncles, he had four uncles, they came out of Minnesota. All four brothers came out here. Now, they'd all served in the Army in World War I, I think. But for some reason, they came. These three Peterson boys came. I guess, I say, looking to make their way.
How did they know about coming?
Well, you know, some came to make a living, but most of them, they were unlike us. So they were mostly retired folks. Yeah. But they were coming to get free land, hoping to make a living. Yeah. And
not much hope of meeting
try
women.
Try making a living up here.
But
anytime.
We all have tried.
Even today, yeah.
You've all
tried. You know, there are certain limitations. Yeah. In the case of the homesteaders, Matt Brill made a dude ranch, guest ranch, he called it. The McFarland ranch didn't become a dude ranch until after World War II. That's enough.
Why are you putting on a shirt then? Never mind, sorry.
Other homesteaders that made a living up here either worked for somebody else in town in the winter and came up here and worked on their homestead in the summer, or failed.
Worked for the park or the Forest Service.
Yeah, the park and the Forest Service. The first homestead group, as we talked about a little while ago, homesteaded in what became Glacier Park. After it became Glacier Park, the Great Northern Railroad set up a series of big hotels to promote rail travel. Those homesteaders did really well because they organized pack trips for these new tourists that were coming out on the railroad. And if you go to the park and look in their archives, you'll see their camps way back in the backcountry with tables and linens and, you know, there were no paper napkins at those tables. They had linens and...
They were entertaining dignitaries.
Yes, they were.
And people that could afford to come.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
And those people that first came promoted Glacier Park, you know, like Grinnell and...
Vaught.
Did you know that Vaught was a foreman?
Yep.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He was, in fact, Mount Vaught is at the head of Lake McDonald. He was one of the early ones that came to Kelly Camp.
Wow. Uncle Vaughty.
Uncle Vaughty.
Uncle Vaughty.
Uncle Boppy. And so they bought, in 1947, the foremans bought the Peterson homesteads.
And what did they sell?
And Uncle Boppy was still alive then. They were trying to get his papers organized. He was a really tall, rangy guy. By that time, I don't know how old he must have been. Older than I am now, I think. Because he was all stooped over, walked with a cane. And Helen would sit down with him for hours putting his papers together, and they never completed it. So I don't know where his papers are today, but... Because Helen died, and now she's all of her kids are dead.
Yeah.
Mike,
yeah.
Connie.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, we talked about Ed Rue. We talked about Bart Monahan. You missed the stories about Bart. What do you know about Frank Clute?
Not too much. He was at the border. The one that was interesting, I thought, was Abbott.
Ah, Paul Abbott.
Paul Abbott came up here with Matt Brill.
Yeah.
They were buddies. And they homesteaded side by side. And these were smart thinking guys. They staked out 20 acre blocks along the river. So their property is stair-stepped right along the river. And the two homesteads, 300 and, that would be 320 acres, constitute 5 miles of riverfront.
Yeah, yeah.
And they knew what was coming.
Yes.
But Paul then got married. And that can be good or bad, you know, depending on where you're at. And I'm not going to comment on anybody here. But the gal he married did not want to be up here.
Imagine.
And so...
You want me to what?
He sold his homestead to Matt Brill. So now Matt has 320 acres along the river... and 5 miles of riverfront, and every other homesteader that failed, like Rue, Matt would look at it and he would come in and either try to buy it cheap. He thought this was too far from the river. So he got the ones he got are all closer to the river than this one. But Matt would take his stone boat and his team in the fall when there's the first snow and go to all the abandoned homesteads, retrieve the glass windows, retrieve any lumber that he could get, pull the nails out of the wall. And that's what he used. And he and his wife built a new cabin every year. And when you go down there and look around today, you'll notice there are no two windows the same size in the whole place. Because he picked them up and hauled them down.
Oh, about Charlie Waters.
Charlie Waters. Oh.
Are you recording this?
Chubb's place, huh?
Good job.
Something about
all we knew was the during Prohibition, he and his wife produced a lot of hooch, I guess.
Well,
they were out along the
you
road.
Know,
like lightning.
Those stories are all either exaggerated or plain not true. Charlie Waters may have done that. I don't know. You know, try to find somebody that was an actual customer then or now.
They made their own.
Madam Queen was supposedly running a whorehouse at
oh,
Mud Lake. Try to find a customer there.
You know what? That house right now is owned by Jeff Bridges.
Is owned by who?
The whorehouse that was at
the
Mud
Jeff
Lake.
Jeff Bridges?
Owned
Jeff
by who?
Bridges. Jeff Bridges.
Yeah, the director,
actor.
The director of the movie Bridges? Gave him that cabin, I guess, and they hauled it.
Yeah,
they hauled it down
Jeff
to
Bridges
his ranch somewhere.
Ended up buying it.
Where?
Wait a minute. I'm
Mud Lake. It was right above Mud Lake.
Oh,
beyond Mud Lake, like on the northwest side.
Up in there.
And it was kind of on a big
really?
Knoll.
That wasn't Madam Queen's house.
Huh.
Well, where was the other whorehouse up there?
Madam Queen's house was on the road into Foreman's house. You went right through Madam Queen's yard on the original road.
Ed Peterson had built it down along the lake.
So what was the whorehouse that was up past Mud Lake up on a
I didn't know. Knoll? Didn't know about it, so I missed it.
Yeah.
You weren't looking for it. At least he won't admit it.
Well, John will remember exactly where it is. We'll throw that into the 70s.
Well, I know where there's the wreck of a homestead house back there.
Well, this was actually dismantled, taken down to Livingston, and Jeff Bridges lives in it. He added on to it, made it a mansion.
You mean
who owned it?
Part moved it out.
Who owned it to give it to him? Are you talking about Cimino?
Well, Cimino, I don't know if Cimino owned it or who they bought it from, but John will remember all that.
Wait, was this in a movie or was this
Heaven's Gate?
Real.
It was a real whorehouse up.
So said whorehouse, right? Because he said it.
Yeah, so
it might not be the same one. So there was more than one whorehouse up there.
Well, it wasn't a whorehouse at all. It was Mary Powell, and she was living there. There's no whorehouse to it.
Now, Mary Powell, who had the whorehouse, supposedly, did sell a lot of illegal booze. And her daughter moved out here with her and had an illegitimate baby. And so that started the whorehouse story. And who was Papa? You know, and finally they all left. Mary Powell's daughter, one of them, came here. She's dead now too. And I used to get a Christmas card from her every year because she wanted to see where all this happened, you know. And who knows the truth? We all have secrets, don't we? I don't, but maybe you do.
It depends on from who.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the baby
I don't know. I really discount most of those stories of whorehouses. There weren't enough people here to support a whorehouse.
Maybe Cimino had it built and simulated a whorehouse.
How about those rich people coming to Glacier?
Well, they didn't come up here.
They probably brought their
lives with them. Now, Cimino did build a whorehouse.
Yeah, I'll bet that's
up TV Lake Road.
That's dismantled in Lake. Yeah.
Yeah.
And oh, Mud Lake. You're right. That's up Teepee.
Yeah.
Teepee.
That's right.
And it's gone.
I know. Jeff Bridges took it apart and lives in it.
Oh, that's the one you're talking about.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Now, I can relate.
Now it's all coming together.
Okay. Yeah, that was not a real whorehouse.
That's right. It must have been.
But I have the finger lamp that the madam used in Cimino's whorehouse.
You have a lamp?
Yeah.
Yeah. Me and Sweet Rachel and my daughter Capella were actually in that movie. Remember when they were throwing the dust down at Rachel's property?
Yeah.
Which is now owned by, Boyd. Mark and Diane Boyd.
And their kids.
And Benson.
Benson sold to Boyd and they now own the whole thing.
They own the whole thing. I wondered about that. Yeah. That was Sweet Rachel's property.
Yeah.
You were in the movie.
Cabin. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. They had with the first aid.
That's two generations apart.
That is, yes.
The homesteaders, you know, you got to factor in the road, which is almost impassable, and at least half of the homesteaders traveled it by horse and wagon.
Yeah.
A 1925 Model T. It's not something you want to run to Columbia Falls to buy groceries. Mm-mm. Esther Day once told me that when she was 8, she got the best Christmas present she ever got. Guess what it was?
An orange.
You've heard the story. It was an orange.
I know.
It was that rare to have fresh fruit.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, and they spent whatever winters they could, if they could find a place where they could stay for free and maybe get paid a little, they would stay in town.
Yeah.
And the men would trap maybe in the fall and winter. And that was about the only cash they ever saw. So
Bill Adair would
take
the pelts.
You had to get out and search for your own. You couldn't go to a whorehouse. It just didn't pay. It's not logical.
Speaking of Teepee Lake, what do you know about Adelbert Glover, the Glover homestead?
What lake?
Glover, Teepee Lake, out there.
Can we talk about Esther Day again?
No,
I got lost on that one.
Of all the homesteads in North Fork, I think the Glover homestead is the only one still in the original homestead family. There may be others, but that one I'm sure of.
That's cool.
Huh?
Yeah,
that's cool.
So where's that house on Teepee Lake?
It's not on Teepee Lake.
You go on past.
You go
Angie's
past Teepee Lake Road, and it's in to the left.
Okay.
The original homestead house is there. It's a kind of a rare thing because it's pretty small, but it's two-story. And all of the family carved their names in the front porch.
Oh, that's cool.
On the walls. Huh? And it's kind of neat to see. You can kind of see the history.
And I talked to the guy.
No, it's fully complete.
Because what was her name? Felicia Glover. And then she became Felicia somebody else. And finally Felicia somebody else. So she had at least two husbands. But that family was quite prolific. They've got... I think the last time I checked it, there was about a dozen direct relatives. And they share ownership in it.
That's pretty cool.
That is cool. They've held on to it.
Yeah.
And they, well, we patrol it. They pay the...
How old is it, I wonder?
How what?
How old is it, I wonder?
Yeah, good question.
1914, I think.
1914.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
But I've met multiple Glovers in there at different times. There's one group of young guys that come from Washington State to snowmobile in the winter. And there's a lady Glover that comes from Flathead Valley in the summer to clean up the mess that the Glovers from Washington make. Because her story is that they can't cook anything without grease. So I've got to scrub the ceilings, the walls, everything. It's all grease.
How about Earl Ryan?
Earl Ryan was a postman up here for years and years and years. His original homestead was what is now owned by Paul Marotz.
Okay.
Yeah, Paul Marotz. And then he later moved down and lived where John and Pat Elliott lived.
Right, down that road.
Yeah. But yeah. I never knew. He was gone by the time I came here.
Well, the one question was, why are all these people up here? You had the stuff down at Pole Bridge and around that area. And the answer being when, before it became the park, you had the inside road that came all the way up to Kintla Lake, right?
Right.
So they come all the way north.
It didn't come all the way to Kintla Lake. It went all the way to the border.
Right. And then they'd come across here. And then they settled all the way out Trail Creek.
The answer is simple. The biggest thing you need in your homestead is what?
Water.
Potable water. And Trail Creek provided that access.
Okay.
And Whale Creek to a lesser degree, but they did, for some reason, that first steep bank stopped them. So they stayed on the level ground up Trail Creek.
Dick Woodmansee, clear out there at the end.
Yeah.
There were a lot of homesteads.
Well, it was kind of funny because Ed Peterson shot and killed Billy Cruz up here in 1932 in a fight over a woman. Billy Cruz had advertised for her, got her out of a Heart and Hand magazine, and she came. And they spent the winter together at what is now Dick Lay's property. And in the spring, then, Billy Cruz had a job as a sheep herder on the east side, and so he got his good friend, Ed Peterson, said, "Now you watch out for Mary here."
And he did.
And he had just finished building a second generation homestead house on Mud Lake. And it's a nice two-story log house. So he moved out of it and gave it and 5 acres to good old Mary. And then Billy came back. And Billy was known on the North Fork as A, a drunk, and B, a very bad temper. And so when she had received a letter from him that he was coming back, so she got out of there. And that's one thing I know about Charlie Waters. She went and stayed at Waters.
She stayed with the Waters, yeah.
And was gone from the house. So here comes Billy. And the cabin is cold. So what's he to do? Well, he went to see his good buddy Ed Peterson, who had promised to watch out for Mary, find out what happened. Well,
I don't think there was anything between Ed and Mary. He was just being a good neighbor.
Well, who knows? You know, there's many ways to be a good neighbor. So Billy went up there, and then he said, "I'm going." He accosted Ed Peterson, who was staying in the lake cabin, his original homestead house. And of course, Mary's house then was cold because she was gone to Charlie's. But Ed also had a young fellow that was helping him trap. And he was related to somebody else up here too, and I don't know who, remember who now. But Billy said, "I'm going to go get my gun. I'll come and take care of her, and then I'll take care of you." So off he went to get his gun, and he came back with a 30-06. No, other way around. He came back with his .22 rifle.
And
he went over to Ed Peterson and said, "I'm going to go take care of her, and then I'll come back and we'll have a little talk." So over he went, and Ed and the kid thought, "Geez, he's liable to hurt her." So he loaded up his .30-06 and followed over to the other cabin. And as he approached the cabin, and Billy was drunk, so they claimed, Billy came out of onto the porch facing the lake at the top of the steps and raised his rifle like he was going to shoot at Ed Peterson. And Ed, remember, in the end, it was only Ed's story. Billy wasn't there. Ed said he just swung his rifle around and pulled the trigger. Now, this is his .06. Well, he hit him. He shot off his left bicep. And Billy then yelled and screamed and ran in the house, and Ed fired one more shot through the window, hit a frying pan hanging on the wall, and Ed looked and found out that Mary was not there. So he went home. And the next day was mail day. And all the neighbors were gathered and wondering what happened to who, you know. And Matt Brill took his team and went up. And Billy was still alive, but not conscious, didn't say anything. And died. And so they called the sheriff. The sheriff and the coroner came up here. Shows how things have changed. The day after he was shot, he was proclaimed dead by self-defense. And that was that, the end of it. And in fact, if you look in this cabin here, I have Billy Cruz's record player, one of the old cylinder type.
That's
neat. Matt, it was given to Matt Brill for bringing the body down. And Matt Brill left it at Kendler Ranch when he sold it to my dad. And when my dad sold it, we kept it. And I still have it. And about 80 records.
Yeah.
It works too?
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
They're cylinder records. They're kind of neat. Some of them are not very politically correct, you know, because there's a lot of blackface stuff at that time. That you can't play on their over the public air anymore.
They play it anyway on the rap stations.
But you know, it's hard to imagine how little most of these homesteaders knew about anything. They came from the east, they didn't know how to trap, they didn't know how to farm. They were lucky if they knew how to chop down a tree with an axe. They didn't know anything about saws. One of the best stories about Matt Brill is that he and Paul Abbott went together and bought a seeder, a mechanical thing you could pull behind a horse to seed the ground. And of course it came all in pieces, and they put it together and they had one piece left over. And that's kind of bad, you know, you think this could be a mess. So they walked up to Woodmansees, 3 miles plus up Trail Creek Road, which wasn't much of a road then. And Woodmansee said, "Well, where's the piece?" He said, "Well, we left it there. We need you to come down and show us where it goes." And Woodman said, "Well, I'm busy. I've got things to do myself, you know." And he said, "Well, we'd sure appreciate it if you'd come down." So Woodman C did come down. And he said, "That's the wrench." But he got even with him. He stayed for 5 days and ate their food.
Well, you're probably the only person I know that knew Frank and Ella Wirtz, that knew Harry and Lena Holcomb. You know,
I was really lucky.
We see their pictures, but we don't know them.
I came here when I was. My dad bought Kendler Ranch when I was 10, and it's funny, in my mind I was just the same then as I am now. Except then I could run from here to the river and not think about it. But they were part of the second wave of homesteaders. The second wave of homesteaders had it a little easier than the first wave. Columbia Falls was bigger, there were more jobs available in the park and in the Forest Service, and more people that would hire you.
Was that when the dam was built?
Oh no, the dam wasn't built till 1950s.
Oh, what year are we in now?
Huh?
What year is it now? I mean, not now, but in
then,
your story.
20. That was the 20s.
20s.
Late 20s.
Got lost. Sort of.
So Matt and Maida Brill were famous cooks. They could make a feast out of practically garden dirt. You know, they were just famous on the North Fork, and they worked in the park. Usually they would try to get a job in the same place, and he'd be a bartender and she'd be the cook. But they helped each other. And her stories about their wedding night were just fascinating to me as a kid, because they loaded up in a wagon, came up the inside road from Belton, and when they got to Starvation Creek, it was raining and dark. And so they slept under the wagon that night, second night on the road, getting air from Belton, and didn't get to the ranch till the next day. But they then built one new cabin every year. with the aim of having a guest ranch, which they did. And they developed it into quite a business. By the time my dad bought it in 1947, their customers were all 20-year customers. They'd been coming for years. This is my cabin, you know, and this is my week. They all had their own week and their own cabin, and they came every year. And they were some pretty interesting people.
Wow. So did they start the ranch after they bought the property from Abbott and added that?
Yes, yes. It was after they bought from Abbott, then they started. Then it's when Matt got married, because his buddy Abbott pulled out. So he needed help again. And Maida, she was a go-getter. You know, they really worked to make that place go. You'll see when we go down there, there's the root cellar, a cabin on top of the root cellar. Beside that, there's a big tower which had a 700-gallon water tank in it. And at its height, Kintler Ranch had 14 cabins. Five of them were homestead, or were housekeeping cabins. That's the word I was looking for. People would come and do their own cooking, and they were down along the river. The ones up by the lodge ate in the lodge with the cook. When we operated Kintler Ranch, we had a one wrangler, two high school girls, usually, that made beds and waited table, and a single cook, and sometimes a cook's helper. And my mother mostly ran it, because my dad was a game warden then, so he was only there. He usually timed his vacation to come when hunting season was on, so that he could. We had the concession to hunt in BC.
Oh, wow.
So our hunting camp was in British Columbia. But Matt then, you know, he, by today's prices, he sold awful cheap. But by 1947 prices, he was able to buy a house in Kalispell and later one in Hot Springs and lived quite comfortably till he died. Mm. Maida died first, and then he went back to where he went to high school and found his old high school girlfriend, married her and brought her out. And they, you know, he had a good retirement and a good life. But it's hard to imagine the kind of work they had to do. When we go down there, take a look at the lodge was down on the one level, and then there's about a 25-foot bank, and the cabins were up on the top of that bank. And he had a road at both ends. One of them is gone now. But the other road, you can see where it's got rock walls like the guy built at Red Meadow Creek. Mm-hmm. And they still are there. Wow. They're still intact. You know, how many years later? From 1930-something 80. To now?
Wow.
Yeah. 80. Yeah, so 70, 80, 94 years. Almost 100 years.
Yeah. Wow.
Makes me feel better about my house in Columbia Falls. It was built in 1906.
Yeah.
What did they do with the ranch in the winter?
Matt and Maida lived here year-round. They stayed year-round. There was no Improvement Association or Landowner Association then. The Holcombs and the Brills were the social center of the North Fork. More Brills than Holcombs, because Matt and Maida had the big lodge. It was a big living room, so that's where the dances were held. Mm. Holcombs were more the card-playing groups. Uh-huh. They could set up four or five card tables in their living room. And, of course, Harry became famous for shooting a bear in his living room. All of these guys, you know, they didn't have money. They didn't target shoot. For example.
Mm. Yeah, that'd be too expensive.
You know, you didn't buy ammunition till you were out. You know, and Harry, the bear broke into his house. His bedroom was offside, and the living room, the staircase to to the upstairs was in the living room, and on the first landing was the gun safe, or the gun case. Well, the safe, it was just a cabinet. And that's where his rifle was. And the bear got in, and the bear was in the kitchen with a big wide door into the living room. And Matt snuck in his underwear to the gun cabinet, ran back to the bedroom so he could shoot the bear so the bear couldn't get at Lena. No ammo. had to go back to the gun case. One bullet he had.
Oh, gosh.
One shell, but it was big enough, and he shot the bear in the living room and became pretty famous. You know, Mel Ruder wrote big articles about him shooting a bear in his living room. His wife, Lena, sitting in the other room, and she made coffee after he shot it because she insisted he drag the body outside that night, right now. And Harry and Lena were great friends with the Blocks. The Blocks, Walter. The old man Block was a retired fireman from Milwaukee, and he had purchased the Price homestead on Trail Creek, right across the creek here. And they became close, very close friends. And the Blocks had two grown sons that came with them here. And they started a mink ranch. But the famous pictures really were Harry and Geraine Block, who had long, dark red hair, clear to her waist behind. And she and Harry standing with each of them had killed a black bear. So they were pictured with the bears. But the boys had this mink ranch, and my dad was a game warden at the time, and he arrested them because they were shooting moose to feed the mink. And the mistake they made was they labeled them. All the jars of canned meat in the root cellar were moose meat. And so all my dad had to do was take one jar, and they confiscated and tested it. It was moose meat. They were in violation, and that was the end of the mink farm. That mink farm used to sit right where the roads into Consolvings and Ludd's are, oh, yeah, on that flat. Mm-hmm. And they pumped water from the creek. Yeah. But you didn't, you know, in those days you didn't have to have a permit to drink out of the creek or to pump water out of the creek. You could just do it. Mm. And I don't know if maybe...
Wait, you have to have a permit?
You bet.
To drink water?
No, not to drink it, but to irrigate.
Water rights.
Yeah, to pump for a garden or a field or something, okay. You do. You can't build a bridge across it either. And I always, but you know, we've got a guy on Trail Creek. We call him Rambo. Hardly anybody ever sees him. He has got a super duper cement bridge across Trail Creek. And we discovered it during the Wedge Fire. And he's got all the permits he needs for him. It's all completely legal.
And he lives up there full time?
No, he lives in Big Fork. Big Fork. We didn't even know, you know. We saw the road down there and knew there was a new summer person. But when Wedge Fire came, his mother, some relation, called the sheriff's office, worried about him because of the fire up here. So Lynn and I went up there.
Wow.
And we walked down that road, and we came to a small camper trailer.
Yeah, I can't remember.
And it had a shotgun leaning against the front door. And Lynn checked it, and it was loaded, shotgun. And Lynn said, I'm not sure I want to walk away leaving this behind me. So Lynn took the shotgun. And we walked on down the road, and here's this really neat bridge. And Lynn and I walked out in the middle, and Lynn yelled, you know, trying to see if anybody was around, and no answer. So we came back home. And about 10 minutes later, here came Rambo, was one of the neighbors up there. He said, somebody stole my shotgun. Did you know about that? We said, yeah. You go talk to him, and you'll get it back, probably. Luckily, Lynn is big.
Are you talking about?
What's his name, Larry?
Huh?
What's Rambo's name?
What's Rambo's name?
I can't remember.
Riggler.
I don't. Huh?
Riggler.
Riggler?
Yeah.
I couldn't remember.
Nice guy, really. I've met him several times since then, different places, doing different things.
Yeah, I know his son, Jesse, real well. Yeah.
He minds his own business. I caught him cutting firewood on Forest Service one time with a tractor, which was technically, you know.
Handy?
And I said, no, it looks like to me you're cleaning it up, so get it out of here. I'm not real good about wood permits. If somebody wants to cut some firewood, let them.
We all remember that one.
Well,
Larry said we could.
No, I didn't say you could. I said I would not stop you. That's different.
Well, I'm not saying I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Good me to know. Either.
I'd only cut it if it's available.
Only if you need it, right?
I went down to get a permit to cut some wood on the state land over there, and he says, we don't give permits over there, but if it's just a couple of trees, we don't care.
Yeah.
As long as you're not logging.
Yeah.
Well, the one that always kind of irritates me is warts. There's a lot of dead fir in there, and you can't cut it there because it's too close to the Wild Scenic River. Yeah. But the Forest Service goes in there every fall and cuts the wood for warts. Now, if they can do it, why can't I? Yeah. It seems to me it should be equal.
I would agree with you there.
You know, but
then you're taking it away from them, and they'll have to go farther.
Well, they don't. You know, there's so much of it. Yeah. It's half of it's going to rot before it's taken out of there and used for firewood. Well, you want to go down and look at the successful homesteaders?
Yeah,
you can.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
David, will you ride with me so you can open the gate?
Drive down.
You gotta get my glasses because I can't see anymore.
Okay, well, get them and I'll meet you at the car.
I brought posters if y'all want any posters for your outhouses.
What kind of posters?
I don't know what
chicken posters?
That her dad did.
I don't know
why. Yeah.
The chicken posters, there's a bunch of them over there. Y'all take as many as y'all want.
I had one. I took it to the hall.
With Ellen Horowitz. Ellen Horowitz had a trained chicken.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And her dad, Jim Hale, and Ellen took the pictures of the
chicken.
Yeah, he built some little skis.
Yeah, I remember the chicken.
But it always impressed me when you talked about the Holcombs. You said you were eating there, and
Harry
said, eat all the vegetables, everything you want, but for sugar, we have to buy that.
In defense of Bud Block and the feeding the mink, the moose meat, I know there's two different stories on that, but what Bud, I got to know Bud real well.
Yeah.
And what he told me, he says, now we did kill a moose without a permit, and we did can it for their own consumption, but he did go to the mink. Because mink will eat meat that's 2 weeks old. And they don't need to can it to preserve it for the mink, because they can feed the mink rotten stuff all day long.
Yeah, but that's true.
He did, he said, we eliminated all the ground squirrels.
bring me some.
Yeah, to feed the mink. That makes sense, really.
Yeah. But they did. They got fined, and they did pay the fine.
I wonder if there's any escape mink.
They did. They didn't even argue it.
No.
Really. Actually, the blocks and my folks were close.
What's that?
Well, Jerrine just died. 6 months
in
ago.
In the winter?
One of my good friends.
Jerrine? Danny's wife.
Mm-hmm. Those pelts are worth something.
He left here and became a professor.
That's right.
I don't know. You still see weasels really and ones with the round ears, and we still got things in the weasel family up here.
And he married a clapper girl.
They probably got extirpated, as they say.
Zilma.
Got them all.
So they kept the mink alive all winter. They must have done that.
Yeah,
probably. I mean, how old is a mink when you make it into a...
I don't know.
Two, three, maybe. I don't know. Hi, baby girl. How you doing? What a sweet pup. You are such a sweet pup.
You're a goddamn fat mutt. Yes, you are.
See, and you love me, right? Yeah.